He is the new voice of talk radio, Alexander Danilov.
Hello there. Hello. Something's wrong.
Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right, excellent. So I apologize about the issues that we have technologically. So a little bit of a delay with the interview, but I appreciate you coming on. The purpose of the show today is to spotlight one of your books that I just finished reading about maybe a couple weeks ago, and I wish I had read it sooner. It's George Washington on Leadership. It's a phenomenal book. I got a Barnes & Noble a while back. Don't know why I didn't open it, but I finally committed myself to it, and I couldn't have been happier. So I appreciate you writing the book and for coming on the show.
Great. Thanks. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. So as you know, in our communication before coming on, I've had a bunch of historians come on, a bunch of people that write about the American Revolution, Revolutionary Times, but they write about some historians think, you know, decide to write about the whole thing as a whole, but you decide to get into really the characters, the spite, and a lot of the tumult that was going on between the people that we revere, Washington and Jefferson, Hamilton mm-hmm. and Jefferson, and all the other characters there. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the human aspect of it, because people don't realize how vitriolic it was back then.
Right. And especially in this election, which you know is pretty up there on the vitriol scale. But I tell people if they want to contemplate real flaming, destructive, paranoid political rhetoric, they have to go back to the 1790s. And it really runs right up through the War of 1812. One historian called that period the Age of Passion. And paradoxical, because the leading figures were the founding fathers, the men we put on Mount Rushmore, that we erect monuments to, that we think of as great men, because they were great men. And yet, in the creation of the first two-party system, the level of suspicion and rancor was off the charts. Thomas Jefferson really thought that Alexander Hamilton was a British agent and a secret monarchist. Mm-hmm. And Alexander Hamilton really thought, or at least he wrote in one letter, that the Jeffersonians would set up guillotines if they won a presidential election. So, what looked to us like crazed conspiracy theories were the common currency of politics then.
Yeah, and not only that, obviously it got a little more personal with some of the people that were around Washington as well, some being called pedophiles or tendency towards pedophilia and things like that. So.
Well, now that was an outlier. That was Baron von Steuben, who was one of the officers who came here during the American Revolution to fight for our cause, and we were seeking them in Europe because we didn't have a lot of native officers with experience. And so our agents in Europe were offering commissions to officers there to come over here and fight for us and lead us. And one of the most effective of these was Baron von Steuben, who had served in the army of Frederick the Great, and he really figured out a way to teach the Continental Army how to drill and maneuver in formation, which is, you know, it's important in a battle. It allows you to be flexible under battlefield conditions. But in order to do that, you've got to be trained to do that. So he arrives here, and Washington gets an anonymous letter a year or two after he's arrived, saying that, well, one reason he left Europe was that he was committing familiarities with young boys. So it was an accusation, what we now call pedophilia, and Washington ignored it. And the reason he ignored it is that he hadn't seen anything like this in Steuben's time in America. He hadn't heard anything like this from anybody else. And Steuben was a very effective, useful officer. So why bend yourself out of shape over an anonymous accusation? And I think clearly that was the right thing to do.
Speaking of Richard Brookhiser, he's the author of many different books on the Founding Fathers, the Revolutionary Period. The book we're talking about today is George Washington on Leadership. I recently completed his book on the heels of finishing First Entrepreneur, How George Washington Built His ...and the Nation's Prosperity by Ed Langle. Another great book. So really took me into, I didn't really expect to see a lot of the entrepreneurial aspect of Washington as you gave in the book. And so many people look at our founders as, you know, as racist in today's purview. They look at them as slaveholders and things like that, but they did understand what was going on at the time. It was a global symptom. It was a global disease. But George Washington was a different kind of person from a lot of different ways. So let's talk about him out of politics, because he really hated being in the limelight. He couldn't speak in public. There's a lot of things that people don't know about him, but there's a lot that they don't know about him when he was on his farm, which is really where he wanted to be. So let's talk about that, George Washington.
Right. Well, Washington was probably the richest man in America when he died. Now that is figuring in a lot of landholding, and he was often cash poor, as a lot of landowners then were. But he started off. He was a younger son of a prosperous Virginian, but his father died when his father was only 50 years old, so his father had not had an opportunity to accomplish as much as he would have liked to. George inherited a few properties. He inherited some slaves, but two things worked in his favor. He made an excellent marriage. He was the second husband of Martha Custis, who at the time he married her was the richest widow in the colony of Virginia. And they married when they were both in their late 20s. The other thing that Washington had going for him was he always had an eye for land. His first job was as a surveyor for in-laws of his, the Fairfax family. This was a very wealthy British family. Their land holdings in Virginia were the size of the modern state of New Jersey. So obviously he did surveying of this property, and Washington was one of the surveyors they employed, and this trained him in having a good eye for land, in recognizing good land when he saw it. As soon as he began making money, he began buying land. He served in the French and Indian War, and as a reward for that, veterans were given grants of land in the Ohio Valley in what's now Pennsylvania. And he took full advantage of those opportunities. He was always looking for good purchases. And over time, this bore fruit. Now, what's fortunate for him is that the life of a tobacco, which is how he starts when he finally inherits Mount Vernon. He inherits that from an older brother who dies. But the tobacco economy in Virginia, which had sustained it throughout the early 18th century, begins to go into a long decline beginning in the late 1750s, 1760s. And, you know, a lot of planters just stick with it, and they go down over time. Washington is one of the first to realize, I can't keep this up. He switches from tobacco to wheat, which is a much less prestigious crop, but it's more lucrative. And also at the same time, the soil of Mount Vernon, his main plantation, is being exhausted. It was never that great to begin with. It was over clay, easy to exhaust it. It had been exhausted. So if Washington had not been a crack land speculator and developer, he would have gone the route that other great Virginians went, men like Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, James Monroe. Jefferson dies bankrupt. Monroe loses his property during his life. He has to move to New York and live with his daughter. Madison staves it off, but during his lifetime, but his widow finally has to sell off Madison's plantation. So that was the fate of Washington's peers, but he is savvy enough to avoid it.
Once again, speaking of Richard Brookhiser, he's the author of many books on our founders and the founding era. And some of the books, actually, I haven't mentioned before, Founder's Son is actually a little bit different. It's about Abraham Lincoln, who is not one of our founding fathers per se, but definitely inspiration and inspired by our founders. So we'll talk about that hopefully in a later interview, another interview. But you have a book on Governor Morris. You have a book on Alexander Hamilton as well, which is Alexander Hamilton, American Gentleman Revolutionary, which is Governor Morris, who you talk about extensively also in this book because of how
right.
close it was.
And yeah. the bicentennial of his death was yesterday.
Yeah. So now with the book we're talking about today, George Washington on Leadership, again, he, as a public figure, he always needed to exude. It wasn't an ego thing for him. It was more just people had to know what his stature was to get a respect level. His crew knew it, meaning the people that he had served alongside, the people that were in his in the army. And when foreign dignitaries would come over, they had to address him properly. Otherwise, he wouldn't acknowledge them, or he wouldn't take whatever they were trying to do, whether it was peace agreement or otherwise. So let's talk about that version of Washington. As a man who, again, not an ego trip, but as a person who understood the power of the position, how it needed to be recognized for the country to prosper and get on its own two feet, because the 1776 and the Declaration of Independence, all that kind of stuff, that's really almost irrelevant when you talk about all the later years and when it almost crumbled how many countless times.
Well, there are two things going on with Washington and the way he presents himself. One is something that every leader has to look at himself and decide, and that is, what's my physical presentation? You know, what do I look like? How do I appear to people? And, you know, you have to work with the hand you're dealt. Washington was dealt a pretty good hand. He was tall. He was strong. He was graceful. So he maximized those qualities. Every war he fought in, he designed his own uniform. You know, he knows he looks good in uniforms, and he wants to make sure that he looks the best he can. He's very mindful of his horsemanship. Thomas Jefferson described him as the finest horseman of his age. And Jefferson was an excellent horseman himself, so that was a meaningful compliment. If you've got something, flaunt it. And that's principle Washington followed. Another thing, and this is more complicated, he has to establish the standards for a republic. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is the first republic in the modern world, one of the first. All the other nations of Europe, really all the other nations in the world, are monarchies of one sort or another. Mm-hmm. And monarchies and court life had established the rules for courtesy. I mean, courtesy is from the same word as a court. That's where people were polite. They were polite in a royal court. Now that's gone. So the United States has to establish its own standards and its own rules for conduct. And obviously, they have to be simpler. They have to be more Republican with a small r. There is a notion, not that everyone is equivalent, but that they are politically equal. At the same time, people have to have respect for the United States and for the President of the United States, who many situations. So Washington has to find a way to be both accessible and dignified. And I think he does that during his presidency.
Absolutely. There's so much more in this book. Again, the book is George Washington on Leadership. Not enough time in the day for us to cover it all, but I do. I would love to have you, and would be honored to have you back on to talk about some of your other books. Again, the Lincoln book is a little bit of a departure, although not completely. It's something that I'd really love to focus on. But I encourage everyone to go to your website, which is richardbrookhiser.com. They could also link out from the show description on my site. And I encourage people to follow you on Twitter as well, because you're incredibly active on there, maybe a little more so than me at times. So I give you a lot of credit on there. But the Twitter handles are Brooke Heiser. I encourage people to follow you. Read up on some of your books. You know, go purchase one out. It won't harm anybody, because this is really great information. You put a lot into it, and I appreciate you writing the book and for educating us.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much.